Iran's Islamist rulers celebrate the 45th anniversary of their revolution by asserting that they have overcome all of their enemies. We ask a U.S. researcher whether the Islamic Republic's rhetoric of victory matches its reality.
That's the image that they're portraying, but as I've said earlier, domestically they're not doing well at all.
What do young people inside Iran think of 45 years of authoritarian Islamist rule? We'll hear about a VOA Persian undercover project that got some answers. And Western diplomats try to mediate an Israel-Hezbollah truce that would push the Iranian proxy away from Lebanon's border with Israel. A former Israeli national security advisor tells us what he thinks a deal should entail.
Whatever the agreement is, we have to have a verification procedure that makes sure that Hezbollah does not come back.
From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran. Good morning. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Iran's ruling Shiite clerics staged a series of big rallies in Tehran and other cities on Sunday to mark the 45th anniversary of their seizure of power. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi used his address at Tehran's Azadi Square to trumpet his hostility toward Israel. Know that the Zionist regime is doomed, he said to supporters, who chanted death to Israel and death to America. Raisi also asserted that the Islamic Republic has overcome all of its enemies. Israel has been fighting Iranian proxies on multiple fronts since October, asserting that it is months away from defeating Hamas terrorists who invaded from Gaza. Israel also has warned that it could launch an all-out war in Lebanon if Hezbollah continues cross-border attacks from there. Iranian state media said Sunday's rallies drew millions to the streets. I asked Holly Dagras, an Iran analyst at the Atlantic Council, what she thought of that claim.
Well, historically, the clerical establishment has liked to exaggerate numbers, so the fact that they would say that there were millions out and about does not surprise me at all. And even that skepticism is actually on the ground as well. These individuals show up for a variety of reasons. Of course, there's still pro-regime support, but some come to be there because it's something to do. And Iranians have actually honed in on this, and they have a phrase in Persian, which is sandishkor, sun kiss, or orange drinkers, because they're handed out free snacks and drinks to come and show up to these events and are bussed in. So even Iranians themselves are very skeptical. But I know people talk about numbers about pro-regime support. Of course, it's really hard to figure that out. But I think maybe the closest example is maybe looking at the last presidential election turnout and looking at the numbers for current hardline president Ebrahim Raisi, which was about 16, 17 million. So maybe you could argue potentially that that might be the regime support. And it, I would assume, has even dropped more because we had the Mahsa Amini protests later on. So I think that could really give you a sense of where the regime support lies.
Well, there's still a lot of opposition to the government in Iran, but there were no protest gatherings, as far as I could see, on the anniversary date, although there was some footage posted on social media, nighttime videos of people shouting anti-government slogans from their homes, as we've seen in the past. So what do you think is the mood of the opposition movement in Iran on this 45th anniversary of the Islamic Republic?
Well, I would say that the anti-regime sentiment's alive and well. Just because you're not seeing numbers in the street doesn't mean that people don't feel that way. Of course, you mentioned the footage of people chanting from their windows and rooftops. That was something that was done pre-1979 revolution, and it continues till this day. Back then it was against the Shah, now it's against the Islamic Republic and Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. I think that a lot of people have skepticism, but and I'm going to cite Dr. Ali Ansari on this, that we're right now in a pre-revolutionary phase in Iran, and it's because there's systemic mismanagement, corruption, and repression in the country. And until those things are not changed, you're going to have a lot of anti-regime sentiment on the ground. And I think that the protesters we've seen over time have made it loud and clear that they do not want an Islamic Republic. And from my understanding, that's not going to change until this regime's gone.
Speaking of the government itself, it uses these anniversary events to project its message to its own people and to the world. And for this particular anniversary, the main themes included President Raisi highlighting the Islamic Republic's hostility toward Israel, calling for Israel to be kicked out of the United Nations. There were displays of military hardware, including missiles and drones, and Iran has been using these kinds of weapons to help Russia fight Ukraine and to help its own proxies in the region fight the US and Israel. So what message do you think Iran is sending when these are the key themes of its anniversary celebration?
Well, this is a typical circus. We always see them show anti-Western sentiment, whether it's against America or Britain or Israel. This time around, of course, because of the ongoing Gaza war, there was much more of an anti-Israel bent in their rhetoric, but it's not something different from what we've seen before. The sense that you get from the clerical establishment is that they're in a place of victory. They view that they're arming Russia and Ukraine. They've managed to get themselves into BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Essentially, much of the Arab street is on their side in terms of their views on Israel and the Gaza war. They have two permanent UN Security Council members, Russia and China, working with them closely, as I've mentioned. They've managed to defeat COVID and, in their eyes, crush the protests. So they're really operating from a place of that they're not vulnerable, at least on a foreign policy front, that they're doing really well, that they're victorious. So that's the image that they're portraying. But as I've said earlier, domestically, they're not doing well at all. And that's somewhat of a veneer here. Is this projecting of strength on this 45th anniversary of the Islamic Republic?
Well, you were speaking about how the Islamic Republic sees itself as having a kind of victorious foreign policy strategy. It was interesting to me that the U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Abram Paley, had a social media video come out the day before the anniversary with harsh criticisms of the Iranian government and also pointing out from the U.S. view that Iran has never been more isolated. So what do you think is the reality here? Is Iran more isolated than before, or is it truly able to build this bigger coalition to achieve its revolutionary goals?
Well, I think really what it is that we have a global north and south divide here. And so when it comes to the global north, the West, Iran is isolated. It is isolated from the West. And as it leans more towards East, towards Russia and China, that's going to be the case. But in terms of the global South, Iran is more leaning towards that. And that's where they're getting some of their support. And I think that's what they're leaning on, because in essence, they see the West, specifically Britain and the United States, as these imperialist powers that are trying to suppress the voices of countries in the global South, like Iran. And they feel that they're standing against this imperialism. So just to make a Star Wars reference, they think of themselves as the rebels versus the empire. So in their mind, they're doing everything right. And it's the West that's the problem here, even if it means there's a lot of double standards and hypocrisy going around.
Well, Holly Dagres, non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and curator of the Iranist newsletter on Substack, joining us on the line from here in Washington, D.C. Great to have you back on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight.
As we just heard, many Iranians do not believe their Islamist rulers are doing everything right. VOA's Persian service interviewed some of them inside Iran days before the revolution anniversary for a special TV show that aired on Sunday. The interviews were conducted discreetly, concealing the faces of the speakers and altering some of their voices to protect their identities, as Iran does not permit VOA to operate there and deems it a hostile entity. One young woman said many people who took part in the 1979 revolution now admit that it was not what they wanted. She said they see the revolution as having changed Iran's direction from progress to regression. Niyusha Bograti is VOA Persian's executive editor. I spoke to him in our studio and asked how he was able to secure those interviews inside Iran.
Well, Michael, thank you for having me. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, to be honest with you, given all the security risks. Just we have to keep in mind how the situation is in Iran if somebody just speaks on the phone with any foreign-based media, let alone to an American-funded media.
They're taking a risk.
Exactly. They're taking a risk of persecution, imprisonment, any kind of harassment that you can think of. It was difficult, especially on some more challenging issues, such as, for instance, the anniversary of revolution. Before that, we had people talking and sharing their sentiments about the Hamas-Israel war or about women.
Another very sensitive topic.
It is very sensitive. It's like one of the highest in terms of sensitivity for the Islamic Republic, obviously. But it's all because of the passion of people for the freedom of expression. I mean, that's the most honest answer that I can give. Of course, it is difficult. It was difficult to get in touch with them, to establish connection, but it's their thing. It's their passion. They want to talk about this. They want Iranians to know what is really going on inside Iran. They want to counter the propaganda. So I have to give credit to the people who are doing the interview and being interviewed.
When you talk about the passion of the people who are contributing to the show, how does that passion also kind of coexist with the anxiety they must feel if they're approached by Voice of America to be interviewed? I mean, VOA is considered by the Islamic Republic to be a hostile organization. So how do they reconcile those probably conflicting emotions?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Iranian people, unfortunately, have learned throughout the years and since childhood to have these two, like, dual emotions towards everything. You live on a large part a dual life, at least during my time, which was more than a couple of decades ago in Iran. You just learn to act one way in the school, one way at home. But at the same time, people have learned to overcome these frustrations in order to contribute to the free flow of information, contribute to the world knowing what is going on inside Iran. So it was a challenge, but fortunately they did it.
Well, let's talk about some of the main themes that you heard from the men and the women, the young men and women who gave their comments to VOA Persian. What did you hear?
It's fascinating. I can just give you one word for that, regret. I would say that people have a very solid, regretful view when they're looking at the revolution, the life before revolution and after that. And it is not just the younger generation, it's not just the people who were against the revolution. Even the people who took part in the revolution obviously regret what they did on some part, how the turn of events led the regime after revolution to evolve. So I would say the very main theme of all the interviews that we did was a regretful point of view towards the revolution and the regime of Shah.
Well, when it comes to regrets, it's interesting because the people who were interviewed were younger generation folks who were not alive 45 years ago. So why is it that they are feeling regret for something that they had no part in?
Well, because they're seeing that how their image is across the world, not theirs, but, you know, Iran's image in general, they're seeing how the standard of living has dropped drastically, how astronomically the economic situation has, I mean, the prices have gone up, the economic situation has fell down, how the freedom of lifestyle, freedom of day-to-day life. Well, of course, yes, during the monarchy of Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, there were certain restrictions when it came to politics. Of course, there were censorship, but there was nothing to be compared with what they're experiencing, we're experiencing after the revolution. Simply no experience at all. They put all these images together, how the world used to look at Iran, what the place of Iran in comparison with other countries, such as, for example, this is very much popular in Iran to compare Iran's situation before and after revolution with countries such as South Korea, for example, or Turkey, because at that time Iran was equal or even higher than them in terms of economics, for example, not even going into the freedom.
And now it's fallen behind.
Falling astronomically behind.
Now, I understand VOA Persian is planning some more special programming, mm-hmm. which includes interviews with people inside Iran. Can you give us a preview of what's coming next?
Absolutely. Next one also is a very highly sensitive issue for Islamic Republic. It's the issue of Iran supporting Russia in the invasion against Ukraine. We have spoken with people, obviously, politicians, the officials in Ukraine. We have had the chance to see some exclusive images, materials about how Russia is using Iranian-made drones. But at the same time, we have a big portion of the documentary, people inside Iran commenting on how these policies of Islamic Republic in support of Russia has resulted in their deteriorating day-to-day life. So that is a very general preview that I can provide you with.
Well, Nyusha Bagrati, executive editor of VOA Persian, thanks so much for being with us here in the studio on Flashpoint Iran.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Iran. I'm Michael Lippin. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah has dismissed Western efforts to mediate an end to months of low-level conflict along the Israeli-Lebanese border. In a televised address on Tuesday, Nasrallah said Western diplomats who have traveled to Beirut in recent weeks with ceasefire proposals only seek the protection of his enemy, Israel. He said Hezbollah, a U.S.-designated terror group, would stop its attacks on Israel when the Jewish state stops its war to defeat Hamas. Eyal Hulata is a former Israeli national security advisor and an analyst with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. I met Hulata in Washington last Friday and asked whether Iran believes Hezbollah has achieved enough goals to justify pulling it back from the Israeli border.
Thank you, Michael, for having me on Voice of America. It's an important opportunity to speak to your audience. I think it's a matter of perspective. I would like to think that when Iran looks at it, they think that Hezbollah has provided some support to Hamas. I think that the leaders of Hamas do not think that Hezbollah provided support to Hamas. I think the leaders of Hamas are very frustrated that Hezbollah did not join this in attempt to put pressure and violence on Israel from two fronts. They clearly could have done way more than what they've done so far. And you're right that I think that realistically, Hezbollah is losing in every combat and engagement they did do with us, and I'm sure that they are cognizant to that. Because they have a culture of not telling the truth, it might be possible that decision makers in Iran aren't able to really understand the complexities of this. It might be possible that what they say, their narrative is that Hezbollah is actually doing a lot, right? Hezbollah has been able to evacuate the north. That's a big deal, by the way. For us as Israelis, it is a big deal. The fact that we've evacuated so many people is not a good thing. So I think it's more balanced than that. I would be surprised that Hezbollah will voluntarily decide to push to the north. And if they do, because of some calculation, they will have all of the intention to come back. And this is why I put so much emphasis on verification. Whatever the agreement will be, and the Americans, I think, know this very well from the Israelis and also from their own experience. Whatever the agreement is, we have to have a verification procedure that makes sure that Hezbollah does not come back. And if they do, we know about it and we have ability to act upon it. Otherwise, we're not really preventing another war.
Well, when Israel considers how to hit back at Iran for not just supporting Hezbollah, but also the major support Iran has provided over the years to Hamas. Given your own experience, you were in government until recently under the Prime Ministers Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid. What can you share from your own experience in that national security role about the way that Israel is thinking of exacting a price from Iran?
I think from a strategic Israeli perspective, Iran is the root cause of most of the security problems that we experience. Iran has built an array of proxy organizations around us, what we call a ring of fire. And the organization I work in, Foundation for Defense of Democracies, have devoted a lot of attention, both in research and publication, to describe this ring of fire around Israel. Iran also built a direct capacity of ballistic missiles to attack Israel if they decide to. And of course, above all, it's the Iranian nuclear program. And the fact that Iran still strives to go nuclear, and we've seen the IAEA reporting that Iran went back to enrich to 60% uranium, that's all very, very devastating. It's all against all of the agreements that they did, not only the JCPOA, but with the American administration right now when they release funds in exchange of releasing hostages. And Iran continues to do this throughout. They're activating the Houthis against global trade, even though the United States president told them not to. And this is a global, regional thing. And I say global because Iran is increasingly tied to China and Russia to back them up.
Israel sees it as an existential threat. Right.
When Israel looks at the threats around it, the only threat that has the capacity to become existential, should, God forbid, Iran become nuclear, this could be existential for Israel, definitely. And this is why Israel is devoted so much to it. Israel does not have a direct front with Iran. Unfortunately, Iran created a direct front with us through the proxy organizations. But the government I served for, Naftali Bennett as prime minister, has led a national security philosophy that says that we need to go after the head of the octopus and not just the tentacles. They have equipped, funded, and trained array of proxies to keep us busy, but they cannot stay rest assured in Tehran as they go about this. And Israel over the years, you know, I don't want to get into the details of that, we've exercised various means not only to collect a price from them, I call this more directly to prevent their ability to implement their strategy, to curb their ambitions to become an existential threat to Israel. And when Iran is on the defense, it's more difficult for them to go on the offense. We've seen this with various examples over time. I have to say that, unfortunately, I'm not sure that the current Israeli government is doing enough in this. This is something that we'll need to do more.
I wanted to ask you, what signs have you seen under this Israeli government of Israel using its various capabilities to try to curb, as you were saying, Iran's own ability to threaten Israel in all these different ways?
I'll answer that question. It has, of course, a lot of political aspects into Israel. I've been critical from the beginning of this government that they did not get their priorities right. Netanyahu, when he came into power, said that the first two priorities of his national security will be to continue to curb Iran and to reach normalization with Saudi Arabia. And unfortunately, most of the things that this government has done throughout the year did not support those two priorities. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where this isn't the case. 2023, unfortunately, was one of the best years Iran has experienced throughout the years. And that's significantly frustrating for me because 2022 was actually one of the worst. Nothing went for the Iranians the way they wanted 2022. And unfortunately, a lot of what they're trying to do, they're able to fulfill in 2023. So, you know, I don't want to make this more political than I should, but there is a lot of work to be done on the Israeli side on this. And I truly hope that as we stretch out of this war that was imposed on us, we'll be able to recalibrate our focuses and make sure that we devote enough attention and enough pressure to push Iran back to where they deserve.
Can you give some examples of what kinds of Israeli actions you think would be realistic and would make a difference?
Well, first, I think that what's important to say is that this shouldn't be just an Israeli effort. What has been working extensively effective in the past is collaboration between Israel and other countries on this. Iran is not a strategic threat only to Israel. Iran is a strategic threat to Saudi Arabia, to United Arab Emirates, and to other the Gulf countries. And Iran, indeed, is a threat to the United States of America directly and to its partners and interests in the region. So I don't want to get into details of what we do. I mean, you know, everybody know there has been enough written about the shadow war between Israel and Iran. And, you know, this is not the medium to get into details of a modus operandi of things. But what I will say is that there is a host of things to be done. Short of war, for sure, Israel also needs to prepare for the contingency where we actually need to use military force if nothing else works. And most of all, Israel needs to align its strategy with the United States of America, who right now exercises way more pressure on Iran than it did before because of what's happening in the region. The operation, the naval operation in the Dead Sea against the Houthis is directly against the Houthis, but it is clear to the administration that Iran is behind this. The response to the killing of servicemen, we've been following all of that. And I think that this takes more and more attention in the administration. Unfortunately, it has been imposed on the Americans. You know, this is all things that I think they would have wanted to avoid, but they are stepping up, and we'll need to follow and see how this evolves in the future.
Well, Dr. Eyal Hulata, former Israeli National Security Advisor and a Senior International Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, speaking to us here at the FDD office in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for coming on to Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you to the audience.
That's it for the program. I'm Michael Lippin. Great to have you with us, and we hope you'll join us next week for another Flashpoint Iran.